Chapter 14. The hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I felt a pair of unseen eyes watching us from somewhere. "Are you sure it's a spy?" I asked, as we carefully detangled ourselves and took out our weapons so we could scan the area.
"I can hear a heartbeat,"
she said, but then frowned.
"But it sounds too fast to be a human."
Before I could respond to that or ask any further questions, the unassuming floor vase melted, and in its place, a creature with wings and a spade-like head appeared and hissed at Zoe and me before it scrambled up the nearest bookcase and launched itself in the air. "Catch it!" I yelled, and the two of us sprinted out of the library on the tail of the creature. It screeched when Zoe flung a knife at it and missed.
"Come back here!"
the cat warrior roared and threw another two blades at it. The creature screamed again and scurried around the next corner like Mario Andretti, and even left long claw marks into the wall. "It's just going deeper and deeper into the manor," I panted as I picked up steam. "We need to corral it and force it out of the western wing at least."
"Agreed,"
Zoe said. "I'm going to try and head it off. Keep chasing it," I instructed. And at the next set of intersecting corridors, I veered left as Zoe and the creature continued straight. Then I pushed myself to sprint even harder to try and make it to the next corridor. Sure enough, the creature attempted to escape deeper into the manor by trying to bank left at the next intersection, directly into my path. The creature screeched to a halt, and it flared a set of indigo feathers from either side of its head before it hissed again and turned back the way it came, where Zoe fought to steer it toward the grand foyer. Zoe and I worked in tandem like that until the flustered creature had no choice but to flee through a window.
"It's out,"
Zoe said, as we both flew through the front doors. "We have to get it before it gets loose in the city." I returned my short blade back to its holster so I could concentrate on keeping up with the thing. But even though it had wings, it didn't appear to have the ability to do more than glide a few feet off the ground. "Do you have any knives left?"
"No."
Zoe panted through her winded breaths as we pounded over the ground. "Rocks it is, then," I said, and scooped up a softball-sized stone while she did the same. And we alternated throwing the rocks in order to try to maim it at the very least. The creature chattered and then did a backflip barrel roll thing that had it zipping over our heads and gliding toward
the stables,
Zoe gasped, as we lost sight of the lizard thing around the bend. "Come on," I shouted, and I pulled her through the trees in front of us instead of taking the extra minute to traverse the winding path. It shaved off a second or two, but we weren't fast enough to catch the creature before it slipped through one of the stable windows.
"Give me your left blade,"
Zoe said, and I tossed it to her as I armed myself with the right one. I held my finger to my lips, and together we silently entered the large stable with slow, creeping steps. As we walked farther into the row of stalls, the sound of someone talking to himself floated out of Prosper and Victory's stall. "Rylan," I mouthed to Zoe, and her eyes grew wide as her ears flattened against her head in fear for a moment before a fierce and protective look crossed her face. It made me want to grin an inappropriate grin, and I knew there was literally no one better to have at my side at this moment. She could be one scary mama cat if she wanted to be, of that I had no doubt. Zoe stalked ahead with the blade inverted in her grip as if she was a shadow, and she crept around the wall where we could still hear Rylan chatting with Prosper as he brushed Victory.
"I wonder what name your foal is going to have, Victory," Rylan said as I walked up behind him.
Before he had a chance to register my presence, I reached around him and covered his mouth so he wouldn't scream. I whispered in his ear, and let him go when he nodded his understanding.
"Alex Person?"
Prosper tugged at the bond. "Danger, Props," I beamed back. "Keep your eyes open for a minion."
"Minims?"
Prosper questioned.
"No minim, only gal."
Zoe leapt back from where she'd been examining Prosper's extended saddle just a moment ago. The shape-shifting creature melted like liquid clay and dropped to the ground with its back to the wall. Now I could see the saddle had returned to its normal size without the extra seat.
"No, don't! It's Gelf!"
Prosper all but yelled in my head, and I winced and slammed my eyes shut.
"What? Ouch! Prosper, turn it down! Okay, okay. Zoe, wait!"
My hand shot out, and I stayed the furious Catwoman's hand before she thrust the serrated blade through the creature. No, not a creature like Igoric, but an animal. Just an animal.
This isn't a minion.
Zoe blinked as she finally saw the critter for what it was.
No! No, Minim! Is Gelf! Only Gelf!
Prosper stamped his six hooves and tossed his glossy black mane. Gelf? I asked aloud. That's the third time you mentioned a Gelf. What is Gelf?
Meep.
The scaly creature peeked its head from under a wing that seemed like it belonged more in a flying squirrel than something that looked like a black monitor lizard with odd indigo plumage framing its face.
Is Gelf!
Prosper stamped again. Oh! I said and glanced at Zoe, who had discarded the weapon in her hand by stabbing it into a hay bale so she could get closer without spooking it. The critter flared its head feathers and then ducked under its wing again in fright.
Hey, little guy!
Rylan, in typical Rylan fashion, slowly crawled toward the flying lizard with a hunk of dried meat held out to the trembling animal called Gelf.
Gelf is a mare,
Prosper added helpfully. Apparently she's a she, bud, I said.
Oh,
Rylan nodded and crept closer.
I'm sorry, Gelf. That was rude of me to assume. Would you like some food, girl?
Zoe and I exchanged fond looks over our weird foster son's head while he continued to talk to the critter in coaxing tones. My wife's smile was soft, and by the way her hand traveled from her heart to rest over her flat stomach, I could tell she was thinking about our own kits we would have one day. If they turned out anywhere as kind as the gawky stable boy, then I would be content. Where did Gelf even come from, Props? I questioned through the bond as we watched the flying lizard stretch out its neck to sniff the jerky in Rye's hand.
Gelf come with Rufus, and Rufus's Tovish person,
he said.
Helps Tovis reach nesty nest.
That makes sense. I beamed back before I switched to speaking out loud. Hey, Zoe, I guess Gelf is the way Tovish was able to make it to Doler's estate.
Interesting.
She responded and flicked her tail back and forth.
That would make sense. Old Tovish only had one leg, after all.
I guess I didn't really think about it, I said. I just figured if anyone with a peg leg could climb those cliffs, then Tovish was just stubborn and crazy enough to do it.
Whee!
Gelf swallowed the jerky in one gulp and then started licking Rylan's face with her blue paintbrush-like tongue. Rylan laughed, and the lizard tickled under the boy's chin, until he gave in and wrapped his arms around her. Then the energetic critter suddenly went from the size of a dachshund to the size of a Saint Bernard, which made the kid let out a groan and an oof. I think she likes you, I said with an arched eyebrow.
Can we keep her, Dad?
He huffed out under the weight of the critter and continued to rub Gelf on her powder blue torso. Gelf purred. Well, I don't know about that. I knelt down so I could pet the flying lizard on her smooth stomach. And I laughed when I could feel her vibrating like a house cat on hot concrete. We don't even know what she is or how to take care of her.
I agree.
Zoe chimed in and scratched the critter under her chin. She then winked at me and I could tell we were on the same page.
And taking care of her is a lifetime responsibility. What happens when you become bored of the tedious work?
I would never!
Rylan gasped, as if the thought was inconceivable, and then clutched Gelf to him. Okay, as long as you can get Mr. Jenner to help you look in the library for information about Gelf. You may keep her, I said in my best responsible dad tone and grinned inwardly when Zoe nodded gravely.
I will, I promise!
Rylan grinned so wide, I was afraid his face was going to get stuck like that.
Come on, Gelfie!
Meep!
The flying lizard shrank back down to its original size. And both boy and critter scampered up to their feet.
You may only choose one book and read one chapter, and then you must go to bed,
Zoe hollered after them.
Okay, Mom,
Rylan shouted, and then hit the stable doors at full tilt as he raced his new dog, lizard thing. I feel like there should be an award for the frankly awesome parenting you and I just did, I snorted, as I went over to retrieve my blade that Zoe had stuck in the hay bale.
I do feel the urge to exert my influence over Rylan's young life, and find myself wanting him to make good choices,
the Catwoman said with her arms clasped at the small of her back. Her stoic demeanor was at odds with her tender words, and it just reminded me how multifaceted she was. Every side to her was complex, mysterious, and beautiful, and I knew deep down I was seeing glimpses of her soul in moments like these. She must have noticed me staring at her because she blushed and dropped her hands back down to her sides. "You're going to be an incredible mother to our own kids." I reached out and pulled her toward me so I could rest a palm against her flat belly. "When the time comes."
"Alex."
She breathed and pressed her brow against mine.
"I confess, I am beginning to desire the feeling of being full of our kids. But my heart breaks because I'm just so unsure I can keep them safe. Hearing you say you have faith in me as a mother eases my mind."
"Zoe," I said and cupped her dear face. "There has never, and I mean never, been a person I've wanted to have children with, ever. It's because I know what it's like to be abandoned by parents who are supposed to look after your well-being. I see how you do that with Rye, and it makes me trust you, so never doubt yourself again."
"I love you,"
she said through a breathtaking grin, and then kissed me deeply. But just as I was getting into it, especially the little nibble thing she did to my lower lip, she pulled away with a smack.
"Did you mean it earlier, when you wanted to start putting our seal to good use?"
"What?" I mumbled, as I had to bring my brain back online after that brain-melting kiss. "Minx."
"I would like to use some gold to purchase a signet ring for Rylan,"
Zoe said, and her words lifted the lusty fog between my ears.
"Since we will be leaving him behind when we go to Tear."
"Typically, signet rings have the estate seal on the front, I remember," I said. "I also remember how a signet ring can also be a concealed dagger, so that's perfect for him to have on hand to protect himself."
"Excellent,"
she purred and nuzzled my face with hers. "Now go on. I'm going to finish cleaning up all the stuff Rylan left behind in his hurry," I chuckled.
"I'm going to make sure he actually does as he was told,"
she said. "And that's why I know you're going to be a great mom." I kissed her cheek and watched her walk away. I was content with how my life was currently going, so I started humming a tune under my breath as I picked up the brush and finished where the stable boy left off.
"Alex Person's mate is baby?"
Prosper asked through the bond. "No, not yet, bud," I chuckled. "But maybe one day." After I finished tidying away the canterflies for the night, I made my way back to the manor, popped in to check on the quiet infirmary, and then walked my weary body up to the suite where my wives were waiting to welcome me into their warm arms. We slept like babes, all doped up on the bumblebird honey that night. Surprisingly, my usual vivid dreams took on a hazy quality, like I remembered my actual dreams having before Aventhol. There were some picturesque scenes with vague impressions of safety, comfort, and joy. And even though I couldn't really pin down any specifics when I woke up in the morning, I couldn't help but lay there as a deep serenity ebbed and flowed out of me with each breath. It was going to be an excellent day, I could tell, and I used the earliness of the hour to snatch some time to myself as I crept downstairs to the scullery to make myself some coley. After that brief moment of respite where I actually managed to get through at least half of my drink, it was another hectic morning of the crew rushing around in preparation for all of us to travel. So that meant a lot of small logistical fires I needed to extinguish, like the necessity of purloining a pair of Vane's manipulers last minute to pull our personal carriage, because Victory and Prosper were going to fly to Icarian alone. Apparently, because Victory's ego was prego, she would be unable to pull things or allow passengers for a while. And of course, Prosper would want to make sure his mate made it back to the other estate unharmed. On top of that, we also needed to use the Porax Mel and Bowden arrived in yesterday with the crates of bumblebird honey and coley powder. However, the larger Porax, Ben, injured one of its six appendages, and after being looked over by Shay and Madame Midgen for good measure, was declared unfit to make such a long journey. Normally, it would have been fine to just utilize the other oxroach, but because the carriage in question was also loaded down with the materials needed to build our vendor stand, Jerry, the smaller of the Porax, was outmatched. Which really threw a spanner in the works because Velralla ostensibly needed to meet with the stall proprietor before mid-epic, or the coveted space the cockatoo woman fought for would disappear. Good thing Jenner and Horace were on it, and they raced off to Gatetown's local livery so we could borrow a Porax. Finally, Mel, Bowden, and Vel, along with a handful of any servants we could spare, took off for the palace square. "Now that the crisis is averted, huddle up, crew," I said to everyone gathered, and motioned for them to get closer. "Before we leave, do we all know the plan? We have a lot to do at Icarian before the ball, and I have a feeling we won't have a chance to slow down once we get there."
"The Jewel House will be the top priority,"
Shay said.
"There've been people working on the grounds non-stop, so if they need a hand, please check in with them."
"Yes, but do not lose track of the time and forget to get ready for the festival kickoff," Jenner said again. "If any of you need anything for your Yule ensemble, please see fit to purchase what you need when we all make a trip to the Mid-Crescent Market for the sharing of mead. Then, after the Fire Sky display, we will all return here for the ball. However, Alex, you and your wives will need to change into the traditional garb the host wears when he lights the dawn brazier. Don't worry, I managed to find a reasonably priced Yorfox mantle from a talented tanner I shall pick up in the market."
I blinked at the itinerary the koala man just rattled off. It started off okay, but by the end I only understood about 10% of what he said.
Great, yeah, yep, sounds like everyone is up on the plan.
I glanced around in hopes someone would ask for clarification on anything, but no one even batted an eye.
"Looks like you all are super. Only there's just one thing."
My stomach growled.
"Only one?"
Shay teased. "Okay, two things," I grinned. "One, what's the breakfast situation, obviously? And two, I think I underestimated how much I really needed to look at those books about the festival you gave me, Jenner."
"I gave you those over a fickle ago,"
the koala man gasped. "I know, but it was right after I inherited Gela's mansion, and apparently his obligation to host the ball," I said. "I didn't know I was actually going to be made to do anything, so I just skimmed the parts that looked interesting, like the part with the fireworks."
"So what you're really asking is for a course crash in the significance of Mid-Crescent?"
Zoe said. "And breakfast," I reminded her. "I also want to know about breakfast."
"Hello?"
Arvid announced his arrival with his typical sleepy drawl and a basket of something heavenly smelling in his three clawed hands.
"How convenient,"
Amaya said in her much-too-sunny-for-morning voice as she took the basket from the sloth man and grabbed two sweet rolls for her and her sister before passing it to a bleary-eyed Rylan with a shrunken gelf coiled around his neck.
"Now, only one of your quandaries remains to be answered."
"Come, let's save the stories for when we get on the road," Horace said, as he climbed up to the coach seat. "For now, we should try to get to the Forest of Yule before proper sunrise." "Why's that?" I asked, as we all started piling into the cab while Arvid plodded his way to the attached wagon on the end.
"It'll be worth it, trust me,"
Shay said, as she held the door open for Anwar and Amaya.
"Then, when Zoe tells the story, it will mean more. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Jenner?"
"I suppose."
The koala man sniffed as he finished cleaning the glass of his monocle.
"Although I will say, Mr. Alex, that I wished you would have read the materials a little more carefully."
"You're right," I chuckled as I helped him into the cab. "I'll make sure to do my homework in the future, but I honestly never thought I would be taking over Vane's manor like I did, never mind any of his obligations, no matter how temporary."
"But now you've changed your mind about being magistrate?"
the koala man questioned shrewdly. "Not quite," I said as I joined everyone and shut the carriage door. "But I have considered keeping Monger Manor and maybe transforming it to a library. A public one, if everything works out the way I want it."
A public library?"
Jenner repeated as if he couldn't trust his oversized ears.
"How would such a thing work?"
"Well, back where I'm from, anyone who wants to know more about a subject can sign up with the library and get a card where all their information is stored," I explained. "Then they register that information when they want to borrow a book, and as long as they take care of it and turn it back in on time, everyone could have equal access to anything they wanted to learn about."
"What an absolutely novel idea,"
Jenner gasped, as his monocle popped out of his eye.
"Maybe if this had been a practice in ages past, the uprisings would have been avoided."
"Were the uprisings like an information war or something?" I cocked my head curiously, as I took a bundle of fruit and cheese from Amaya, who still held the basket.
"Not solely,"
the koala man said, and nibbled on the rest of his sweet roll.
but it was the catalyst for change. The people of Aventhal were tired of being manipulated by those in power because with power came literacy. The uprising started because no ranks demanded to have access to education.
How fascinating, I remarked. Seems like the basic right for education is the same across all universes.
I really think you might be onto something, lad,
Jenner said, as he stroked his stubbly chin. We'll talk more, I promised.
We're almost to the forest, everyone.
Horace thumped the wall of the cab with the heel of his boot. Hushed sounds of glee rippled around the carriage, and I sat up straighter in my seat as I waited for whatever was about to happen.
Look,
Shay whispered, as we went deeper into the forest, and I followed her finger where it was pointing at the thin sliver of moon hanging in the sky. Soon the sun started lightening the forest around us from a permeating black to an ultramarine, and finally to a dove gray as the mist started to evaporate the more the world awoke. Sounds of waking life hummed all around us from buzzing insects to chirping birds, and as idyllic as all this was, I was still nowhere near prepared for what happened when the sun finally hit the canopy of jewel-colored trees. I gasped.